Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello there, Foo followers. Ben Johnson here, the host of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast, reminding you that if you would like to support this show, we have a donations link available. Any spare pennies you may have would be greatly received to help with the upkeep of this show, the website, the social media accounts, and so on. Simply head over to paypal.me/Kung Fu Movie Guide to donate whatever you can. And a huge thank you to any listeners who have supported us over the years. You have our gratitude. Okay, thank you, and on with the show.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello, everybody around the world. Welcome to the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. With your host, Ben Johnson, this is Season 7. We are up to Episode 88, and it is a joy and a pleasure to be chatting with you all today from my home here in London. I hope you are well, wherever you are in the world listening to this episode. Coming up today, I have a conversation to share with you all with none other than Keith Cook, one of the all-time greatest on-screen kickers, a karate world champion, a martial arts instructor and actor. You know Keith Cook from The King of the Kickboxers, the China O'Brien movies, Beverly Hills Ninja. He's Reptile and Sub-Zero in the original 1990s Mortal Kombat movies, of course. I grew up watching those movies in the 90s. He's always been a bit of a hero of mine. He's a legend of martial arts movies, and he's on the show today. More on that in a moment. Firstly, I just wanted to say, and I don't really do this very much, but I was very humbled and touched by the feedback following my conversation with Mike Leader on the previous episode. A lot of people reached out to me to say they were happy to see the show back and that they really enjoyed the episode. So I thought I'd read out a couple of messages here. At Ramon Writes on Twitter sent me a photo of him outside with his dog, and he wrote, "Walking this beast in the rain whilst listening to Mike Leader interview on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Loving every second of it. Great episode, Ben." Thank you so much. The author and action movie expert, Taimon Singh, who has been on this podcast, said, "Great episode of Kung Fu Movie Guide with Mike Leader, all about how the Hong Kong film industry has changed over the past 30 years and the potential action stars of tomorrow." Thank you, Ty. Colin Squire on Twitter, "This is a brilliant episode. Will Mike Leader be back on for part two in the future?" Well, undoubtedly, yes. I mean, Mike has so many stories and his knowledge of martial arts movies knows no bounds. So I'm sure that Mike will no doubt make an appearance on the podcast at some point again in the future. John Paul Gleason on Twitter, "Quality podcast, you two. I could listen to Mike for hours and do as he gets around gladly. You two did your usual high standard, informative, entertaining, down-to-earth chit-chat." Thank you so much, John Paul Gleason. That's very kind of you. And honestly, this does mean a hell of a lot. So thank you so much for reaching out and saying those nice things. I think when you do a podcast, it can sometimes feel like there's a huge disconnect between what I'm saying here in my flat in London and the people actually receiving this at the other end. So reading comments like that, it does make you feel a lot closer to the audience out there. It makes it feel a lot more real, and it's not just me talking to myself. So thank you so much. If you do want to reach out, then please do so. I do love to hear from you guys. We are on Twitter at KF Movie Guide. We are also on Instagram and Facebook at Kung Fu Movie Guide. And of course, there's the email address, hello@kungfumovieguide.com. There is also the option of giving the show a star rating or writing a little review with your podcast provider of choice. If you do have a spare moment, to do that, then please do. It all helps to spread the good word of the show. And for all the contact information and to sign up to our newsletter and to read the latest martial arts movie reviews, head over to the website, kungfumovieguide.com. Okay, Keith Cook time. Keith lives in Los Angeles. I spoke to him via Zoom back in August 2022. He was in his home gym at the time preparing to launch his own training program and product, which is called The Ring Workout. You can learn more about The Ring and the philosophy behind it all via Keith's shiny new website. That's keithcookfitness.com. Keith is 63 years old. It's hard to believe he's in phenomenal shape. If I even look half as good as that in my 60s, then I'll be very happy indeed. So clearly when it comes to fitness and training, then Keith certainly knows a thing or two about that. So do go online, check out The Ring Workout. Also, it's important to note that this conversation was recorded before the sad passing of the director, Albert Pean. Keith starred in Albert Pean's sci-fi action film Heatseeker in 1995. Albert Pean died on the 26th of November 2022, age 69. Okay, that is more than enough from me. I will be back at the end of this episode to sign off properly, but until then, please sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with the great Keith Cook. So you're in the gym there, or are you at home at the moment, or where are you?
I'm at home.
But
I do I teach classes from here.
How have you found it post pandemic then, Keith? Are things sort of back up and running? Are they as they were before, or a few adaptions?
They seem like they are. You know, I decided to close my studio that I had for 27 years. I teach martial arts classes still. I have small groups of kids and adults. And then I do privates.
Yeah.
Also in martial arts. But, you know, like my focus has gone way more towards kickboxing now than like, say, traditional martial arts. I have this workout, this very unique workout that I started with this device right here.
It attaches
to your foot, and you can do, it's a really good workout. So
yeah.
Anyway, this is the thing that I'm getting ready to launch.
Is this your own patented gym equipment?
Yes.
Yeah, good stuff.
That was another thing that took a long time was to file for the patent. And, you know, one of the things that we're patenting is not just the device itself, but the way you use it, you know, the method. This workout with this ring product that I'm showing you that I actually invented using fitness tubes in very creative ways to train myself and then to train people in my classes. I had a pretty good sized place, and we had chin up bars all the way across one wall. And so we would hook onto chin up bars and do rotations along with extension exercises. And that's what this is for. It's really excellent for rotations, and you can move. You can do foot because it attaches to you.
Yep.
It's not gonna, you don't have to stand on it or connect it to anything. It connects to you. So you can actually move around, which makes it very versatile.
What's that called, Keith? What's the name of it?
It's called The Ring.
The Ring.
The Ring. Yeah.
Great.
And you know, like I was doing it for years. I was actually making my own tubes with recycling what, you know, the cover that covers it to make sure you don't get snapped, you know?
Yeah.
And I made them myself and sort of perfected the length that they needed to be for this workout.
Yeah.
And for different heights of people, we have three different lengths and we have seven different strengths of tubes. And I got everything made in America. It's really high quality.
I follow you on Instagram and I've seen your videos in the past, and you're still doing your wushu forms, and you're still, you know, working on the bag and everything and still kicking and looking great. You've been a teacher instructor for so many years now, and I just wondered whether you'd noticed with the new generation, the younger generations that are coming through your school, has it changed as to why people learn the martial arts these days? Do you still see it as popular also as it as it once was?
Well, you know, my last experience in there was pre-pandemic, really.
Yeah.
It still seems like the main thing for people, and that's why I don't think it matters so much like what style you do. It's about discipline and focus, dedication, you know, those great words, you know, that, excuse me, a lot of parents have concerns about their children being able to pay attention and having self-discipline and being willing to try hard at something. Mm-hmm. I use that a lot when I teach, you know, like, you know, the main thing is to show up and try hard, you know, put some effort into it. And that's not just physical effort. It's focusing with your mind and then being willing to practice and do things over and over again to acquire skill.
Yeah.
And I think also being willing to practice on your own so that, you know, that gets your creativity going more as an individual. You know, I used to train on my own a lot, and I think it's really important to do that. And as what I've noticed is that kids are scheduled more and more in so many activities that they don't have time for that. You know, that creative own time, unless they're not doing a lot of activities, which is pretty rare now.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, anyway, kids have calendars, you know, and they're, you know, they're booked up solid, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't really think that's a good thing.
And also kids, you know, they're into karate one day, but then it'll be, I don't know, they'll be into guitar or drum kit the next. You know, it's just sustaining that sort of interest in those kinds of activities, isn't it?
Yeah. And also I think you know, like my son got really into baseball, and I wasn't a baseball player, but I wanted to really get behind him and support him, and so I learned about baseball. I bought DVDs, and I became a coach in the Little League, you know, because I wanted to be with my son, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard for martial arts to compete with things like baseball and soccer and football because those kids play games every week, you know. And in martial arts, we don't go to a tournament every week, you know. And so basically you're having two practices and a tournament. And with us, you're coming and you're practicing. You might get punched in the face, you know.
Yeah.
And then you come back again the next week, and you practice and you practice and you practice.
If you cast your mind back to the reasons you first got into the martial arts, I mean, I believe you were young. You were 12 years old.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I got bullied a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
I grew up in Seattle, which didn't really get bullied there, but my dad got his PhD at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. I remember being in school, and I was the only kid that was, you know, remotely Asian, you know?
Yeah. The Japanese side of your family is through your dad, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And so, my last name is actually Hirabayashi. So anyway, I got bullied a couple times. I got beat up, and I got beat up by this guy that was supposed to be the toughest kid in the school. I didn't even fight back. I thought there was no point because he was the toughest kid in the school, and there would be no point. I would just make him want to hit me more times or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
And he did it in front of our whole classroom while the teacher was out, and he beat up other kids too, not just me, on different days. You know, I wish I would have fought back now. If I could go back to that day, I would have just went for it because it wasn't good for me, you know, but, psychologically it wasn't good for me, you know? And, I regret it, you know? I felt humiliated, you know, that incident. And I think it made me have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. And it's one of the reasons why I got into martial arts. And I don't think I feel the same way about that anymore, but it was driving me in the beginning, you know?
I really wanted to
be a fighter and thought I was a fighter, you know?
You had that in you then from a pretty, pretty young age. That was just your thing?
It was my thing, but it was through Bruce Lee, you know?
Yeah.
Because when I saw him, you know, his attitude, the attitude that he had, And so that's why I wanted to do Kung Fu, you know. And I saw a demonstration at the University of Washington as a street fair. And my instructor, Roger Tung, I don't know if you've heard of him. He, unfortunately, he passed away a few years back. But he was putting on a demo, and he had kids in the demo. And I was like, oh, my God, I got to go there. And so I signed up there, and that was it. I went there every day.
Yeah. And this was Kung Fu Wushu. Were you learning Wushu at this age? Or?
Yeah, I mean, he called it Northern Shaolin, you know, Northern Kung Fu. And then he was born in Shanghai. So he had been introduced to Wushu as a child, you know, but I don't think he gave me all the history of it, you know, and, but his family moved to Hong Kong, and then they moved to Thailand. They moved to Bangkok, and that's where he studied Taekwondo. And so he was, you know, a guy who came from originally a Kung Fu background as a kid, and then when he was a teenager, he took up Taekwondo. He got his black belt in Taekwondo and moved to the United States.
Because you went to see when Jet Li was in the Beijing, you know, national team. Yeah. So you saw that live then, did you? You must have been quite...
I did.
Young. I did. Yeah. Okay.
I was blown away. Yeah. Yeah. I had already seen videos of them previously, I think from an earlier performance or something.
Yeah.
But I remember going to, I think it was the Cow Palace in San Francisco. And seeing the Beijing Wushu team.
There's pictures of Jet Li on the White House lawn there with Nixon. And this was the first time. This was the first signs of China sort of opening up to the world, wasn't it? And, you know, the Beijing Wushu team are there doing their demos. So in the popular culture, no one would have known what Wushu was at that time, would they?
Right. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know. And, you know, people... you know, sort of misuse the word. I think they use it like it's a style or something.
Yeah.
To me, that's not, I mean, I don't look at it as a style. You could look at it as a sport in China, but really what it means is martial arts. So, you know, so it's a broad term.
It's the butterfly style.
You started competing pretty early on as well, didn't you, Keith? Were you just taken with the idea of competing?
I went to the first tournament 3 months after I started. After I started taking lessons.
How'd you get on?
Not good. No.
Yeah.
And I was in the junior division, you know. I think it's like 12 to 15 year olds, so I was kind of young for the division.
Yeah.
And so I got beat up a lot, man, in that division. Yeah. I didn't really start winning till I was in the brown belt division and the black belt division. I think I was competing in black belt division by 17, age 17.
Yeah, wow. And you quickly learn what works and what doesn't when you're competing, don't you? If you just, you know, when you mess up and you get a punch or a kick to the head. That's
And you know, you meet a lot of interesting characters and different ways that people fight and stuff like that. And I thought, again, I want to go back to that. I thought I was fighting, you know, and I was going to point tournaments, but the attitude was, this is how you fight, you know, and they have these rules so you don't hurt each other too bad, you know, or something. Yeah. But the, you know, people follow those rules to very different degrees. You know, some people are trying to take your head off.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really care about the rules. They just want to get fight experience. And you'd run into that quite a bit back then until you get to the higher level tournaments where people are really focused in on the rules and scoring points, you know. They're kind of rough, you know, some of the smaller tournaments. You get a lot of good experience entering those tournaments, you know.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen, you know.
Was that the kind of fighter you were, Keith, or were you someone stickler for the rules?
I would just try to get away with whatever I could. And if somebody was trying to hurt me, then I wasn't afraid to try to hurt them back, you know?
Yeah.
When I was, I think it was 18 or I might have still been 17, I got into boxing. you know?
Yeah.
And I really liked it because you had to get hit, you know, you had to learn how to get hit. That's one of the problems, I think, with martial arts, sort of. It's a big challenge. And one of my coach, Chuck Merriman from the Atlantic World Karate Team, he was the one who said, you know, Keith, karate, kung fu, things like this, they're based on, a lot of it is based on theory, because you don't really do the stuff to the other person, you know. Boxing, kickboxing, jujitsu, even judo, very little theory. You're really throwing the guy. You're really punching the guy, you know. You're really grappling with the guy, you know. And I think that's a really good point. You really do have to learn to get hit. Otherwise, you know, my experience is people who aren't used to it, a lot of times when they get hit, they freeze up or they fall down, you know, they may not even be like hurt, you know, but they haven't trained on that. So they, you know, their legs just fall out from under them, or they panic. When a parent brings in their child too, they have different expectations now. You know, the people used to come in who were, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme fans or something like that, and their exposure to the martial arts was what they saw in the movies, you know?
Yeah.
Now it's because, you know, dads are MMA fans. And so they have different expectations. And I feel that, you know, like I have different expectations too because of MMA, you know?
Yeah.
It's like an evolution of the martial arts, you know?
Do you think if the UFC was around in the 70s/80s when you were seriously competing, would you have gone into the UFC?
I definitely would have tried.
Because
I tried everything, you know. I kickboxed, I fought in the full contact Taekwondo. I fought in contact Japanese tournaments. And I just wanted to, learn how to fight, you know.
Although your breath control is good, it can't beat my death kick.
You were training in China when Donnie Yen was out there, is that right? Yeah. Donnie Yen was part of your team. Yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I didn't get to know Donnie very well. Even though I can't remember if we were on the same flight. We went to the Wushu National Championships in Fuzhou together. And he demonstrated the Mantis.
Mantis, yeah.
And I was demonstrating free sparring, you know, with pads on, with one of the guys that came with us. And so we were all doing, you know, demos and training. And I was always impressed with Donnie, though, you know, and I still am. You know, he's one of my favorites. So,
one of the best. Yeah, absolutely. Were you impressed when you were in China? And obviously that is the national sport there. And, you know, we've all seen that footage of just thousands of, you know, kids or, you know, doing the wushu in the in a line. Were you pretty, you know, impressed when you were over there?
Well, I was very impressed, and I was very impressed before I went. You know, after we left that tournament, we went to the Jiangsu wushu place for that province in Nanjing, and we trained there for like 3 months.
Yeah,
and it was
intense.
It'd be like 3 hours in the morning, you know, you go rest, have lunch, and you go back for 3 hours in the afternoon, 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, at first, and you're running, they have you doing, you know, some physical fitness stuff, like mainly running.
Yeah.
And I remember having like really bad shin splints for a while from all the jumping and the running, you know. But I was really impressed with the athletes, and I don't think they really looked at it as martial arts, though. A lot of them, some of them did, though. You could tell. It seems like they wake up their warrior or something, and it's not just technical. There's something going on in their imagination that is.
Well, there's an element of theater to the wushu as well, isn't there? And it's you know, it's acting in a way, you know, on some level.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the best actors can't tell that they're not really there, you know, really, yeah. You know, when yeah, you're yeah. watching, you can't tell, you know. And I love it when you see somebody doing a form and it looks like they're really kicking somebody's ass, you know, yeah, yeah. I love that, you know, yeah. And that's a big challenge in Wushu because of the, you know, things like the long fist, yeah. You know, and you're doing this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and you're going, yeah. What? How are you going to fight with that, you know?
You obviously are very well known for your incredible repertoire of high kicks, jumping kicks, as displayed in many of your films. Do you put that down to your taekwondo training, but also the wushu as well, to be able to jump, yeah. You know?
I think it's a combination of both, because I yeah. think, you know, one of the things which I think was really good experience for me was I got to work out with the Beijing team because my instructor hosted them for a while when they were here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And so I worked out with them, you know, and there's something in the rhythm of their jumping, you know, that's different than anything else that I had experienced before. And I used to think, wow, they're jumping super high. And they are. They're jumping really high.
Yeah.
But there's even more to it than that. It's like, when they do a jump kick, they get the kick off so early in the jump and so fast that there's a lot of, it looks like hang time.
Yeah.
Because the kick, a lot of times they have already hit the kick and they're still going up.
Yeah.
And that's a rhythm thing. That means they jump high, they jump fast, and they kick early. You yeah. know, and you start to pick up on that rhythm when you work out with them. Yeah. You know, when they go and then you follow up, because we do all this line kicking in wushu.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
they do a lot of line kicking in taekwondo too, but it's more rhythm, bah, 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 you know,
yeah,
they're
yeah.
doing lines and they jump sometimes, but the I think that the jumps in wushu are pretty extreme. But yeah. when you look at some of these taekwondo demonstrations, what they do is just as extreme. Like when they jump up high and kick a board or something, break a board.
It's incredible.
Some of those things are incredible that they do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I can't
yeah,
believe yeah, it yeah. actually. What I started to notice was I was almost always doing a jump kick. Even yeah. if it wasn't really jumping. I was just making the foot on the floor very light so it yeah. could be mobile, you know, but you're still defying gravity. You know, you're still, and you learn that from doing a lot of jumps, you know? And yeah. so I could jump backwards and kick someone. I could jump forward. I could jump straight up and kick someone.
Yeah.
And I use that a lot when somebody's attacking me, you know, taking some distance away and kicking. So yeah. I would literally be up in the air. And that, I think that quick rhythm from the wushu, I think I really learned something on how to get a kick off early, you know, when you're really light on your feet, you know? And yeah. I've seen a lot of taekwondo people do it too.
You bastard, I didn't know who you were.
You watched Bruce Lee, were Kung Fu movies, was that part of your childhood, part of your life growing up? You remember watching a lot of movies?
Yeah, I mainly was into Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Usually when I saw another martial arts movie, I would feel a little like not as into it as yeah. when I saw Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
And I think that goes back to the attitude, which was sort of a little defiant, you know, and I think I related to that mm. at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a lot of respect for Jackie Chan because he's just like such a warrior, you know, like I don't know how he did it for all these years, you know. Yeah. I just get
still
so
going.
Impressed with him, you know, and the creativity. Yeah. But I think he's also a very good actor, you know, yeah. like now, I mean, look at these, I forget the name of the movie he did with with Pierce Brosnan, where his daughter,
the Foreigner,
explosion. The
good
Foreigner.
Movie. Yeah.
Oh man, I was blown away by him in that movie.
Yeah.
You know, I just think, you know, in The Karate Kid, you know,
like, yeah, great, like great.
Blown away by him in the straight role, you know, where he's not doing his usual, you know, ow, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, he's really, you know, but, you know, I'm just like really look up to him. Yeah.
You wanted to get into movies. Was that something that was always a passion of yours growing up? And you were thinking, well, what was your ambitions there?
Well, I think it is. I think it's natural for martial artists, since a lot of our heroes are in the movies.
Yeah.
To aspire to be like
that's
them.
That's true.
You know.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's what inspired me, and that was when my instructor moved down to Los Angeles, and then he was like, Keith, come down here and teach for me, and then you can try out for the movies down here.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
and I
was
like, yeah, I want to do that.
That's the '80s, mid '80s, roughly.
This was 1985. Yeah,
85. Yeah. And you were auditioning, doing acting lessons. Were you doing lessons?
I did, but I didn't really know even how to do anything. So I didn't know how to find an acting coach. I didn't know how to go about it. And actually, James Liu, you know who James Liu is?
James Liu, yeah.
Yeah. He's a very prominent stuntman. And he was, around the kung fu world for a long time. You know, I knew him before. I think he was even, I don't know if he was doing stunts, but I met him at martial arts tournaments,
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that guy looks like a badass, But anyway, I got to know him, and he told me about a guy that could take headshots, and I got some headshots made, and that headshot guy told me about some place where I could become an extra, because I didn't know what I was doing,
And
so I'm teaching martial arts and I'm wandering around blindly trying to figure this out.
Did you want to be a lead actor then? Was that your dream?
Well, that was my dream. Was my dream. I think I talked to Ernie Reyes Sr. and he told me about an acting workshop that him and Ernie Jr. used to go to before that series Sidekicks that he did. And they used to teach martial arts, because a lot of acting studios have some kind of, they have stage fighting, or they'll have ballet or whatever, some kind of movement thing. And so I show up there and signed up for the acting classes. That's how I met Michael Biehn, the guy who from the Terminator,
and of course,
ended up training him. But I started teaching classes there for a trade-off for my acting tuition. And I was there for like 6 years.
Oh, wow. Wow, wow.
You go to acting school when you... 6 years.
Yeah. So you kept learning acting. It was became another discipline of yours. Yeah. Great.
I was going there at the time, like I did China O'Brien. And, King of the Kickboxers, a lot of that stuff. I worked on them with the acting coach before I went, because I would have the script ahead of time. And as you probably could see, it didn't always work.
Well, I've got to talk. So your debut, according to IMDb, is a film called Picasso's Trigger.
Yeah. And that
in Hawaii.
Yeah. And I got that. That was kind of a stroke of luck, because it was the director, who was Andy Sedaris. He directed NFL games, and he was trying to make a transition from the NFL to being a movie director.
Action movies. Yeah.
He did. He would hire all these Playboy bunnies to be in the movie.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of fun. The guy in my acting class referred me and got me an audition on there. I didn't even have an agent at the time yet.
Right.
And I went to the audition, and the guy goes, okay, say, hey. And I go, hey. And then he goes, can you do a backflip? And I go, yes. And he goes, you've got the part. So that was my audition.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Abbott, you better give up.
So I know I've heard you tell this story, but it is one of those amazing stories. So Fred Weintraub just literally phoned you up.
Yeah.
Says, yeah. But he'd heard about you through, obviously, the competitions and through a lot of the publicity that you'd got through that.
It was actually through the editor of Inside Kung Fu magazine at the time, Dave Cater.
Did you fall off your seat? I mean, how...
I did pretty much. I didn't believe it at first. I thought maybe somebody, a friend or somebody, was trying to play a joke on me or something. You know, I was like...
Yeah.
He goes, this is Fred Weintraub. And I go... Fred Weintraub, the producer of Enter the Dragon? And he goes, yes, Fred Weintraub. And I go, come on. You know, it's like, no way. And he goes, yes, it is. And I heard about you through, and he told me, and I want to audition you for this role that I have coming up. And I said, okay. He says, I really would like to meet with you right now. And I said, okay, I just worked out. Let me take a shower, change, and I'll be over there. He goes, no, don't take a shower. Just come over right now. And so I had black kung fu pants on, you know, from my workout.
Yeah.
And I just went straight over there, and he lived really close to where I lived. I mean, his office was really close to where I lived at the time. And so I was literally there in like 15 minutes. He was like, so I hear you do martial arts. And I stood up and I was like, do you want to see some? You know, I was just so... like pumped up on the way over here. I was just like, yeah, I can't believe it, you know? And so I was just really pumped up.
And that was for China O'Brien and China O'Brien 2, which they filmed back to back or simultaneously.
Yeah.
I guess that's the producer of the movie asking you to audition. So it's pretty much certain that you were going to get the role then. There was no question mark over that.
I can't actually remember how I found out I got it. I don't think I don't know if he told me that day, because they like to keep you in suspense, you know.
Yeah.
But I heard they were looking at Benny. For the same role.
Quite an experience to work on that, supporting, you know, Cynthia Rothrock, who you would have known as well from your wushu days.
I knew her well. Yeah, from the tournament circuit, and I knew her well.
Did you enjoy being on set and making those movies?
Oh, I always enjoy it.
Yeah.
I loved, Richard Norton was a really, you know, was a really cool dude to work with, you know.
Great guy.
I ended up working with him again on another Weintraub produced project. And I think he was the fight coordinator on that. It was a TV series called Robin Hood, The Adventures of Robin Hood. But he's just a really nice guy and a really good martial artist too.
I know we lost Fred within the last sort of few years or so. It sounds like, from what I've read, he really had your back. You know, he was really fighting for you, getting your auditions. A lot of the film and TV work that you did was as a sort of result of working and knowing Fred. Was he a great person to know and get along with?
Yeah. He went to Warner Brothers, and he also went to Golden Harvest and tried to get me deals, you know. And he actually did get me a deal from Golden Harvest. And it was a 3-picture pair play deal where I would have had to move to Hong Kong. And by that time, I had a lawyer who was representing me. And he goes, Keith, you just got here. You know, you shouldn't take this deal, because you might be able to work here. Why do you want to go to Hong Kong? You know? And I was like, I really wanted to go, you know?
Yeah.
But he didn't. He kind of made that deal go away. That lawyer. He didn't like it, and so he kept messing with it, and they got tired of it. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Do you wish you had taken that deal?
Well, I don't know that I was in the right. I'm wondering if I would have, how I would have done in Hong Kong. You know, like how I would have been, you know, accepted, because I don't speak the language. And
But you had the moves, you had the looks. I mean, Gary Daniels was over there at that time.
I think I would have, you know, this is what I think it would have worked out, you know.
Yeah.
You never know, but I think that would have been a good move at the time, because it just wasn't quite right time for me yet here.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they were quite ready for it. They had Brandon Lee, you know, and they were trying to promote him. Fred actually had a script written for me at Warner Brothers, got a deal going there, and they had an option with me to do this script called Beyond the Shield. And it was about a guy who's in the academy, in the police academy in Los Angeles, and his parents own a Korean market.
Yeah.
And they get murdered. And he feels like the police aren't doing anything. So he quits the academy and decides to investigate their murders, you know,
yeah,
on his own. And so there's a lot of action.
Yeah.
But they go, you know, if Showdown in Little Tokyo does well, then we're going to pick up this movie. And then Showdown in Little Tokyo did not do well, you know. But Fred, you know, I got a lot of stuff because of Fred. They developed a series trial for me called Noble Quest. And this was when a lot of movie stars were becoming TV actors, you know.
Yeah.
It was really hard, you know, and I was the only, there was no stars attached to it at all. It was just me.
Yeah.
And I was really proud of it, actually. We did a presentation, like screen test, like a 15-minute, you know, thing with a story and a fight scene. And I got Jeff Imada to be the stunt coordinator. I don't know if you know Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff. Yeah.
And, you know, I was really proud of it, but it didn't get picked up. Maybe today it would get picked up because just things are different now, you know?
Yeah. Was that quite a sort of rude awakening as to the way Hollywood works? Did you find that experience quite frustrating?
I did. You know, I did. But I wasn't like, I didn't feel like I was, you know, going to give up or anything. You know, it's just that, you know, like in 1994, I opened up the martial arts school.
Yeah.
And it started to take me over in a lot of ways, you know, without even me realizing it. You know, like you're just... Mm. You get into what you're doing, and I stopped wanting to. I also had a son in 1996, and I just kind of stopped feeling the motivation to run around town for auditions that maybe you won't even be right for, you know. Yeah. I auditioned for Mortal Kombat. I really wanted to play Liu Kang, you know.
Yeah.
And the director just didn't see me in that role, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I end up getting the parts that I did in Mortal Kombat, but not the Liu Kang one. And that was the one that I really wanted. And a good friend of mine got that role.
Yeah, so, Robin. Yeah. So, yeah. Robin had trained with the same instructor. Is that right? You knew Robin from years ago.
Yeah, he knew Roger. His instructor was good friends with my instructor. So we had times when we trained together and we'd visit each other. And we ended up going to China together. And I became really good friends with Robin. He's a really good friend of mine. Yeah.
Just on Fred Weintraub, finally, before we sort of close that off, because he gave you the name Cook. Is that right? I read that somewhere.
Yeah. It was named after Sam Cooke.
Wow.
The same.
Really?
Yeah, that's a pretty good.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. But he was really into jazz and, you know, old R&B and stuff like that. But my mom's maiden name is Cook.
Oh, right.
I told him that my mom's maiden name was Cook, and he goes, Cook, oh, Cook, Sam Cook. And he was like, that's a perfect name.
Hey, hot day. I treated you like my own brother.
Nobody's your brother anymore. Get him!
I just wanted to ask you about working with Hong Kong stunt teams, because obviously that China O'Brien was all the Hong Kong stunt team as well, King of the Kickboxers. That, you know, it still looks incredible, Keith, doesn't it? It's still the Hong Kong style of action filmmaking. Even today, it's inspiring, you know, Chan Stahelski and John Wick and all that stuff, isn't it?
It actually works so well when you get that crossover a little bit, you know, like I love working with the Hong Kong stunt people, and I think they're just the toughest. They're very creative. One of the stories that I like to tell is when Corey Yuen, he's the one who shot my fight scene in
Where you do the triple kick.
Yeah. And he wanted me to kick the whole time. He didn't want me to do any punches or anything, okay. You know. But he was very easy to work with. But what I noticed was when he came on the set, it was like, I don't know if you have the E.F. Hutton commercials. When E.F. Hutton speaks, you know, and then everybody gets quiet. And that's what happened when he came on the set, man. Everybody was, nobody wanted to look like they weren't, didn't know what, exactly what they were doing, you know?
Yeah.
You just knew that he was very highly respected.
Yeah.
And what he did with me was, you know, he didn't know me, you know, he just go, okay, I'm going to have these five guys come at you right here. What would you like to do to them? And then I'd say, well, I could do this and this. And he goes, could you do this? And I go, yeah, I can do that. You know? And so it was like, he gave me the setting and he let me do what I wanted to do. And then sometimes he would ask for something, you know?
Yeah.
And like, he asked me if I could hold my foot out and come around. You know? And I said, yeah, I can do that, you know? And I loved that. I felt really lucky that I had that experience. That was the only fight scene that was the only thing he directed in the whole movie.
Yeah. Cause that wasn't his movie, was it? Yeah.
In that fight scene, there's a guy right before I start fighting, there's a guy who falls off that. There's like a staircase that I come running down.
Yeah.
The guy that falls off. I was so impressed. You know, he didn't have any pads on and he fell right on his side on dirt. You know, that was the floor of the house. The floor of this house was dirt. And you know how it was like cement. It was not forgiving at all, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was when this guy took that fall and then they asked him to do it again and he did it again and you could just see that it really hurt.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, as much, I know health and safety wasn't really a consideration, I guess, but it does look good, doesn't it? On screen,
you know,
with a bit of impact, it does make all the difference.
And that slow motion kick that I do at the end of that scene, that's another
triple kick.
Love it. Because, you know, so cool. Not all the stuntmen were Hong Kong guys.
Yeah.
There was a group of Hong Kong guys that were the main guys, but they had local hired people too. Yeah. And that was a big fight scene with a lot of people, you know, in the fight.
Yeah.
And so they had local guys. And when it came to the end and I had to do that triple kick on this guy's chest, he couldn't stand there. He couldn't take it, you know, so every time I kick him with the first kick and to me, I was kicking him light. He would just like, he would try to get away. And I think Corey had seen enough and he just goes to the Hong Kong guys, who wants to stand there and take this kick? And they're all like this, you know,
wow,
and this guy, first take, he took all three kicks.
You help me and we'll split the money.
How does that compare then when you're working, say, on Heatseeker, Albert Pian, mid-90s? That's very quick, straight-to-video sci-fi action movie. That, in comparison to the Hong Kong style, that must have been quite different, I would imagine, Keith?
Well, you know, but... did you know that Chad Stahelski?
I did know that. He's one of the fighters in that, isn't he?
Yeah.
And in the tournament.
You know, it was funny because the day that I went for the audition or screen test or something, no, I think I had already gotten the part and I was going to some kind of screen test or something. And that's where I met Chad.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, I said, hey, how you doing? Or whatever. I was like, what are you doing? Where are you from? You know, and I found out that they were all from the Inosanto Academy.
Yeah.
You know,
which is great.
And those guys are so good. Burt Richardson was the fight coordinator, you know, on that movie, the choreographer, fight coordinator. Yeah. And I love those guys. I love working with those guys. You know, for the little amount of experience that they have, they're so relaxed that when they take a hit or something like that, it's just,
yeah,
they have rhythm. They have good rhythm. You know, they do really good reactions, and they wanted to do this for a living, so they cared a lot. You know,
I
think that was a really good experience. The thing that was so hard about that movie is the way that Albert Pian shoots. He shoots with, instead of like going in for coverage, like what Corey Yoon would do in a fight, is you know, you're only doing 5 or 6 hits, and then there's a cut, and then they reset for another angle or something like that. And they have like 3 cameras, you know. And Albert Pion surrounds you with cameras. He hides them in the audience. He puts them up where nobody can see them. And at any given time, you're being shot by 5 or 6 cameras, and you do master after master after master. And you never know what direction you're playing in, you know?
Yeah.
So as an actor, like an action actor, it's kind of frustrating because you don't, you know.
Well, how do you know if you've got a good take or not,
exactly,
or if it's going to look good?
Exactly. Yeah. So I was always like, okay, I'm going to play for that camera right there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, Gary Daniels was in that movie as well. I guess he, would he have been used to that style of filming at that point?
He's worked with a lot of Hong Kong guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, of course.
And he, I don't think anybody thought that that was a good idea, you know?
Yeah.
And you can see in the movie, you know, the way it came out, I think it's really difficult for the editors, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because nobody, you know, there's so much footage, you know?
Yeah.
And on each take, you know, there's so many cameras running, and, you know, they might eliminate some cameras, you know, but, you know, I remember them telling me they shot 100,000 feet of film in one day, you know? And I was like,
whoa,
that's going to be, you know.
Gosh. I guess they try and get the most out of the limited days.
Yeah. We shot that movie. I was in the Philippines for 10 days.
Yeah.
10 days, and then we had one day in Rome, you know, which was nice, you know.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed going to the Philippines, you know. I enjoyed going to Rome.
You do the naked streak through the streets of the Philippines.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so funny, because I was just reading, you know, because I don't really pay attention that much, but I don't know what I was looking up, and I think I was looking up something with Heatseeker. And then I see this person has done ratings of my films or something like that, and they were comparing it to Jean-Claude Van Damme's booty scenes or whatever, you know. I was like,
right, yeah.
Oh, it's hilarious, you know.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
you know, like I almost like have forgotten about that movie. That's how obscure it is, you know.
Yeah. But this is the thing with the internet, all these things, they come back, don't they?
Yeah. They come back to haunt you.
I must talk to you about Mortal Kombat. And I know you mentioned there you went for the Liu Kang role, but I've got to say, I mean, I love that movie growing up. Wore out the VHS, such a great movie. And Annihilation as well, that came a few years afterwards. The reptile scene, I've got to say, is probably the best fight scene in the movie. And you must be incredibly proud of the work that you did there in that movie. Is that fair to say? Yeah.
Well, I can't remember actually at this moment, how Robin feels about that with his fight scenes that he's done, because he's done a lot of different stuff too. And, you know, he had the fight. He's had some great fights, you know. But yeah, I'm most proud of that fight. Of any fight that I've done, and I'm also really proud of the one from King of the Kickboxers. You know, I think those are probably my two best works. You know, and you know I love that I was allowed to put my 2 cents in. You know, here and there, we're going through the thing, and you want to help. You know, you want to help as much as possible. And I was like, maybe I could do this, and then do a sweep and get up with a spin kick. And then Robin goes, I want to do that. And I was like, go ahead, you know. And so he did that move. It was the first time that I felt like, you know, a fight was given the attention that, you know, the director was really into it. You know, he walked through, and you could see his imagination at work, you know, and you know, nobody wants to compromise the quality, you know, and you just got to love that. You know, the set was really cool, you know. I still love that I still think that's the best Mortal Kombat movie, you know.
Yeah.
I know I'm a little biased.
Are you a fan of the new one? Did you enjoy the new one?
I did enjoy it, but I mostly enjoyed the first part, you know, the first fight scene.
Yeah,
and then after that, it sort of lost me a little bit.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah.
you know, like they have a different Liu Kang, and I want to fight the new Sub-Zero. I'm going to fight
him. Yeah.
I challenge him.
Joe did a great, great job in that movie.
Yeah.
The Sub-Zero Scorpion stuff was, yeah, it was the best part of the movie, really. Yeah.
And that guy, Sonoda.
Yeah, Hiroyuki Sonoda. Yeah.
He's like 61.
I know.
I want to fight those guys. Come on, man. I can do it.
That fight scene's edited so well, and with the music as well. I mean, you know, they really gave you guys a really great platform to really show your stuff there. I think, and that's probably why, it really stands out in that movie. As much, I love the whole movie, but, you know, it's just such a standout sequence, isn't it?
And you know that was done after, right? You know that it was done.
That was the reshoots. Yeah.
Yeah. After they tested the movie, people wanted more action, they said. Yeah. And that was a reshoot. And Robin actually called me up and said, "Hey, Keith, can you come fight me?" And I was like, "Yeah."
Yeah. That's great. Because what was your involvement in the first one? Because I know you did quite a bit more on the sequel, didn't you? I know you were Sub-Zero in the sequel, but. Were you involved in a lot of the choreo as well in the second?
I was involved with, I helped, wherever I could. Robin was the choreographer, and basically I was, behind the scenes, the rehearsals and stuff like that. He was always busy. And so I was helping with the rehearsals and stuff like that. I helped actresses rehearse fight scenes and actors.
Yeah.
J.J. Perry, who played, I forget the character's name.
He's Scorpion?
Well, yeah, he played Scorpion, but he played another character too.
Okay.
Cyrax or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and he was shooting Cyrax, so I couldn't rehearse the scene with him, and so I rehearsed with Ray Park.
Oh, good,
That was really cool. He is such
That's
a cool,
cool
guy. Yeah, he's a
yeah,
great
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're always going to be associated with that franchise. You're perfectly happy to be part of that, that world.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I just started going out with Chris Casamassa and doing some fan engagements around the country. I hadn't done that before. I've been to about four of them now, and hanging out with Chris, because I don't see Chris that much anymore. We trained with we had the same coach in Los Angeles here, and he passed away, unfortunately. And that's where I used to see him. And I the past few years haven't seen him at all. And then we're doing these things together. So it's really fun,
I bet.
It's fun. And it's really nice meeting the fans that, appreciate, that kind of work, and stuff. So, that's been a good thing all around.
Well, I'm afraid you've no choice. How about you dead?
Are you still sort of actively looking for projects? Is there work that you would still like to do on the movie side, or are you quite happy to sort of close that chapter now, would you say?
I'm happy. I'd be happy to do more work too. It's just that I don't go looking for it. I don't go out. I don't have an agent. Yeah. It's just if somebody remembers me and they call me or something, then that's how I end up working these days. And it's sort of like, I did a stunt thing on a new Star Wars thing called Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And it was just because they need people who could do a weapon. It was during COVID. And so I sent in an audition video, which I actually posted on my Instagram of me doing the staff. I hadn't done the staff for years, but I can still pick it up because I teach it,
Yeah, yeah.
I teach it to kids and stuff. And so I can still manage to, put some combinations together and stuff like that. But I ended up getting the part, and it was grueling, man.
Yeah.
But I the last thing I did too was a thing called Champions of the Deep, where I had to act. It was a terrible movie, if I just say it.
Yeah.
But that was just somebody calling me up and said, "Hey, do you want to do this?" And I said, "Sure."
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you're still open to it then, Keith, if someone's, you know, John Wick 5 maybe?
Yeah, I'm up to fight Mark Dacascos anytime.
Yeah, anytime.
Bring it on.
Do you keep in touch with those guys? You must still, you know, see those guys around a bit?
Not much. And actually, since COVID, I haven't seen Robin. We've talked a couple of times, but haven't seen him. And, you know, the only one that I've seen is Chris Casamassa, the only one lately. And seen him quite a bit.
I know you've trained a lot of actors as well, you know, for big movies, Rosa Salazar for Alita Battle Angel, Zoe Saldana. Is that something that, you know, when it comes to training actors, you're still very much keen to be involved in,
absolutely,
in movies in that way?
Yeah. And that stuff, it's kind of odd how I ended up, and I trained the people for Avatar.
Yeah.
And then I trained the people for The Abyss, and then trained Michael Biehn, who was in the original Terminator. I actually taught James Cameron one time because Mike brought him to class, brought him to the workout.
Wow.
So, anyway, shortly after that, I think he had open heart surgery.
Right.
I don't know if I did that to him.
That wasn't a result of the training. When you're training actors, I guess that helps. You've got that acting background, so at least you know, it's one thing learning the moves, but then it's the emotion behind it as well, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, usually we do stuff, like I have some of my guys work with them, and we usually, like if they're new to action and fight scenes and stuff, we choreograph stuff right there and have them, you know, practice, you know, and it's fun, you know?
Yeah.
We can show them what it looked like, you know, and, you know, it's just different nowadays, you know, like the technology and stuff, it makes it a lot easier, I think.
It was Rosa, you'd done some Alita Battle Angel footage. I think you put that on your Instagram.
We shot that there. Very cool. And, Robert Rodriguez put the sound effects on.
Yeah, yeah.
Onto that fight. Isn't that cool? I love
Very
that.
Cool. Yeah.
It's really
amazing.
Cool. And, that's amazing. And she was really, you know, she's a very game girl. I mean, she got, you know, she would spar with my wife, you know, and me. We spar, you know, and she was tough, you know. Like she's very scrappy, and I love that. I love that about her.
Yeah.
And same with Zoe Saldana.
Yeah.
You know, for Avatar.
Yeah.
Because she's you know, she's like a ballet dancer, but she can be so edgy, you know.
So looking back over the film career, no regrets or anything, Keith?
Oh, no.
No.
Not at all. Uh-uh.
No.
No. I think I feel really good about what I'm doing right now. And we really had a very successful school and a run with, you know, I was with my wife at Target, this discount store.
Yeah, yeah.
Right near our house the other day. And, there was this kid who kept sort of double taking me, you know, and I was like, oh, maybe he saw China O'Brien or something, you know, and it turned out it was a kid who was a student of mine from way back. And this guy comes up to me, goes, hey, that kid, told me he recognized you, that you used to be his karate teacher, you know? And so I go up to him, and, he literally shaking. He was,
wow.
So, you know, and, I think I have a lot of relationships like that from all those years of, you know, being a teacher, you know, and I'm grateful for that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think, like I said, it kind of took me over, and it became my main primary focus other than being, you know, a father, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And so it's been great, but I don't regret, the movies at all, man. I had a blast. I had such a good time, you know.
Just finally to end on, what sort of advice would you be giving people, maybe the kids who are coming into your school or that you're teaching who want to get into the movies? Is there any advice that you would be giving the next generation on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, don't go around hoping people will like you, but, you know, you have to be kind of tough and on the rejection, you know. And the other thing is just, you know, you have to practice because it's really competitive out here, you know, like for stunts and things like there's so many people that want to be stuntmen, and I can see why, you know, it's, you know, it's really challenging, you know? And so you have to practice, you have to get really good at it so you can stand out when you get little opportunities maybe here and there and you want to get the most out of them. It's weird. You have to have a balance of being very confident and very humble, you know, so you can work with people and listen and stuff like that. But you got to practice. You got to be ready, you know?
Yeah. And you got to nail a jumping triple kick.
I mean, you know, when I look at what these kids do now, I'm like,
it's incredible, isn't it?
Apart, you know, because, you know, the tricking and the stuff that they do is pretty incredible.
Amazing. Yeah. Keith, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thanks a lot for the opportunity. All right.
Thank you so much. Well, you have a good day, Keith.
You too.
Okay. Take care.
Right. Bye-bye.
Keith Cook there, one of my childhood heroes. Loved watching Keith Cook growing up in the 90s, those China O'Brien movies, Mortal Kombat, of course. What a treat that was to chat to Keith Cook. I hope you enjoyed listening to that. Find out more about Keith's new venture, The Ring Workout, by going to keithcookfitness.com. You can find a link in the podcast description. Here's a bit of background from Keith's website. Keith writes that my fascination with figuring out how to get power in both a punch and a kick using physics, posture and balance led me to the development of the ring workout. This workout system helps maintain your strength and definition through my patent-pending design that works your most comprehensive muscle group, your core. Through this total workout system, I want you to be empowered to achieve and maintain your fitness, strength, and rehabilitation goals. Start a free trial today. It doesn't say that last bit. I've just added that there. So there you go. Working the core. Very important to do that, Foo followers. Never neglect the core. That would be my advice. You can follow Keith Cook on Facebook and Instagram. His name on both of those platforms is at Keith Cook Studio. So thank you, Keith, and thank you to all the loyal Foo followers out there who have listened to this episode right to the very end. I do realise that I say that all the time at the end of every episode, and you may wonder why, but it is just because, according to the stats, not everyone does make it this far into the episode. So if you have done that, thank you so much. That does mean a lot. It means you are the hardcore. You're the Shaolin Masters. You've smashed your way through all the chambers and made it out the other side. So thank you very much for that. Congratulations. Your reward will be another new episode of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast, landing very soon. The next one may be a little longer to arrive because I'll be away this week. So might struggle to turn it around in the usual 2 weeks. But anyway, do keep it locked to all the usual KFMG pod channels to find out the latest updates and news and information regarding the show. So until we meet again very soon, do take care, stay safe, be well, work on that core, and I will speak to you all again very soon on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Thank you so much. Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.